to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I'm Jennifer, and together with my husband Dave, we started with an idea, worked on it as a side hustle, and grew it into our first eco-friendly store. At Upcycle Canada, we repurpose, refinish, and reuse discarded items, giving them new life. Sit in on the conversation as we continue to grow from a small side hustle into something much more. Special guests will drop by and share their journey with you as well. This is the most eco-friendly small business podcast in your favorites. This is Upcycle Canada, where yesterday's items are reborn. Let's do this.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I have somebody that I have been following on Instagram for a while now, on the website, so inspired. If you go to Instagram right now, so if you're listening, you're listening on your phone probably to this podcast. While you're listening, just minimize the screen and go over to Instagram, go to sugarfox_art on Instagram and hit the follow button. First thing you have to do right now, right off the bat, everyone do that while you're listening. And once you've done that, now start scrolling through some of the most amazing things you're going to see made out of materials that are destined for the landfill. I'm scrolling as I'm talking. This is like probably the most inspirational stuff I've seen in so long. Sugar Fox Art, aka Stephanie Hongo's here on the podcast. Stephanie, your stuff is amazing. Thank you for being a part of our show today.
Well, thank you. So thank you so much for the compliments and all of the lovely words, but also thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
This is so exciting to me because I think plastic trash is a huge problem. For me, we do recycling and upcycling in wood and fabric and materials like that, but I don't see a lot of people who focus on plastics, and doing what you do in such a beautiful and creative way is so inspirational. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about your process, about what you do and kind of where this all started?
Well, for starters, I make, like you said, sculptures out of repurposed materials, but it is mostly plastics. For the most part, I focus on animals. I do other things occasionally, but animals are really what I find most inspiring and most interesting to make. Like, that's basically where I've focused as my work has progressed. I've been doing this for about 6 years now. And I started back in 2017. I had a job as an artist, actually working for a grocery store. I was a sign artist. And I loved that job for many, many years, but it started to gradually kind of go downhill. And then by the time I was ready to leave, I was at my wit's end. I was done. And I don't know about what you've really experienced in the creative world, but the jobs that are out there for artists kind of focus more on digital and, you know, computer based and all that kind of stuff. And that's not what I want to do. It's not what I'm really versed in. I kind of know nothing about the computer side of the art world. So I wasn't really finding any jobs that I wanted to do. So I quit without anything lined up. And I thought to myself, I'll just make it as, you know, a freelance artist. I'll just do whatever I can to try to earn a living that way. My thought initially was going to be mural work without a portfolio of mural art, though. I've done one, really. So it was really kind of, all right, what am I going to do to earn the kind of money to sustain me that I also really love? And this kind of just sort of fell into my lap. I don't know if you're familiar with the artist Bordalo II. He's Portuguese. He's a installation trash artist. He uses plastic as well. And I'd been following him on Instagram. I really love his work. I think it's amazing. And he does these grand scale trash mural installations. And I remember looking at his work thinking, I know that I can do some version of this, not as well as him. Like, his work is incredible, but I knew that I could do something like that. But the problem was, how are you going to allow me to go out there and just like start like putting trash wherever? I can't just very well go and slap trash on the side of someone's building without them commissioning me.
Yeah.
And you need someone to hire you for that sort of project. How's that going to happen? So I just thought to myself, well, maybe if I just do it in a smaller scale, I can, you know, make it so it's like, it's art for your home to hang inside. It's not like what he does, which is building spaces. It's more just art for the home. So that immediately just like the gears started spinning. I was running around my house, just grabbing all of the trash that I could find. I didn't know what was viable at the time. I'd never done this before. So I was like, all right, old purses, toothbrushes, this broken hair dryer, various things. I didn't know what the method to fasten it would be. I tried glue, I tried tape, I tried screws, nails, all different stuff. And that first piece that I ever made was a deer that I named Yondu, after Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy, because I named it blue, or I colored it blue. So his name was Yondu. I loved making him. I got an amazing response from everybody. And that just kind of, that solidified it. Like, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep making more stuff. See, like, there's so many different options for where to go in terms of what you're making and how to make it, and lots of trial and error to be had. So it was really like fulfilling, the most fulfilling work that I had done to that point. So I just kept going with it. It wasn't crazy successful right away, but it gradually picked up steam. And now I'm able to do that full time. This is my whole full time gig.
So we talked.
It was a bit of a long answer.
Well, I love it.
As much as you wanted.
You go from an idea and really no concept of how this is all going to play out to where you are now. This is like, I'm looking at your Instagram, 30,000 plus followers. Like, when you started making your first item, did you think, oh, you know, one day I'll have over 30,000 followers and you know, I'll be talking to some guy in Canada on his podcast about my art?
Absolutely not. No.
All this stuff. You know, is none of that?
I think all the best work, like, is for you. It's, I think, you know, if it was being done for the sake of, you know, the potential attention of it, or like to try to make that kind of statement, I don't think that it would have worked out. Right. I don't know. Plenty of people, I think, have maybe found that kind of success. I don't know how they have. I think that, you know, in order for something to be sustainable, it has to be like beloved. You have to appreciate what you're doing. You have to love what you're doing, and you have to be doing it for the reasons that, you know, they move you in some way. And I don't think that, you know, if I was thinking, let's see how successful this can be, that it would have worked the way that it did. It was more like, this is so much fun. What else can I do? You know?
It's amazing. Okay. And so, like I mentioned to you before we hit record, I've been listening to you on other shows, other podcasts, and I look in the comments and I see your community in the comment threads commenting about how much they love you and they love your work, and they're big supporters and they're fanboying and fangirling that you're on that show, and I can't believe I get to hear them today. So I would like to kind of take a step back on the podcast, and I would love for you to talk to the people that are coming here today because they saw your name, they saw Sugar Fox in the title and went, oh my God, I need to listen to this podcast because that's my person. I love their work. What would you like to say to your community that's tuning in today?
Well, for starters, thank you. I truly, very honestly, and I mean this like with all of my heart, that we cannot do this without supporters and followers and all of the people that love our work. You need them. You absolutely need them. And really, social media has been an excellent way to cultivate that audience. If it wasn't for the people that follow my work, there's absolutely no way that it would be successful. I mean, there's ways that you can go about doing it that have nothing to do with social media. You can go into like the gallery route. You can go into consignment. You can just do commissions, whatever it might be. But I mean, my personal path has been to use social media, and that social media wouldn't have any steam if not for the people sharing it, commenting, liking everything. So I truly appreciate it so much. It really facilitates my whole existence having, you know, an audience.
So when I talk to my wife Jennifer about our chat today, we both are on our phones on your channel, and we're just scrolling through photos and sharing back images back and forth, going, oh, look at this, look at this. But one that she fell in love with right away is your sea turtle. And could not escape was the eyes. And we talked about this in our pre-chat, that for you, the eyes are so important. In that example for the sea turtle, and again, if you're on your phone, you got to go check out the sea turtle. I'm clicking on it right now. What is it about the eyes for you in your work that are so important?
Like you said, like the window to the soul is the eyes. And it's, but the interesting thing about what I, well, what I appreciate from people saying about my work, is that they feel that way about the eyes on a lot of them. And I find that so interesting because of the very deliberate choice that I make with most of my work to have it just be a solid black eye. Sometimes solid white if it's supposed to be a little spooky looking, but usually it's a solid black eye. I barely ever go in and do the eye in a realistic, detailed sort of way. I care very much about the paint job on my work. It's one of my favorite parts of the process. But the eye actually started, the style in which I do the eyes started from, yeah, like a deficit, basically. It was because I was not good enough at what I was doing where when I went to go paint in the eyes that they actually looked symmetrical. When I was, for example, I found this out with the very first lion that I ever made. I went in to go draw the eyes in and like paint in a formed in iris and the whites and all of that kind of stuff. And it looked so goofy because the way that I built it, they weren't totally symmetrical. So when all of the detail work went into the eyes, it all looked crazy, way off. Every time I went to go back and fix it, it just, there was no changing it to make it look the way that I wanted. So I was like, you know what, screw it. I'll just make it black. So I filled it in all black and I continued doing it that way. And then I got to the point where I was good enough at the structural part of it that I could go in and I actually did it with a couple pieces and I painted the eye in a more formed out realistic way. And I just didn't like it. I was like, you know what? I really like what I'm doing here with the style of just the solid black eye. I think I'm just going to keep moving with it that way. And I just kept doing it. And I'm happy with my choice so far. I think that maybe going forward, I might change my mind. But I mean, there's a couple of pieces, like there's a little piece behind me, Minya, that Sphinx cat. I painted her eyes in. But that was mostly because that's so much of a Sphinx cat. The huge ears and the slit pupil on a cat, I think is so important to the look of the final piece that I made the choice to make that little distinction on that one. But I mean, in general, I think that I prefer to do them black. And I'm happy to hear, you know, you say that it's translating and still a soulful and kind of connecting and working sort of way, because I really like the look of the solid black versus, you know, going in and doing it more detailed.
Yeah. And if you're on SugarFox_art on Instagram, when you click on any of the images, you know how you can kind of zoom in on your stuff and get closer and closer. You see so much detail that it's like, I don't know. It's like, I kind of get the sense that you're hiding some stuff just out of pure satisfaction for yourself. Where most people would be that's a cool turtle. And you're like, oh, but did you really look closely? Like, I'm talking like super closely, because if you really take your time and look, I think my wife said there's like a little, I don't know if it was a Lego guy or something.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in the, it's like, okay, I have no idea how you do this and where you're pulling from all this stuff. The level of detail is amazing. So you are hiding some stuff in there just out of pure fun. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's my favorite. Because so initially when I'm first building it, it's all about the foundation. It's all about the structure. And I'm not necessarily looking to be super whimsical with the way that I'm going about it. I'm, you know, basically just trying to get the form in. And then once the piece looks like the animal and once kind of all of the hard parts are done, everything seems symmetrical, it seems to be working, then I will go back and I'll find like a Spider-Man's torso and like a Barbie leg and like all these random things that I think that you might not notice right away, but when you look closely, it's still going to look, you'll still see that individual form in the landscape of the paint job. Like some things disappear completely. You can kind of barely tell what they are once they're painted because they lose all of their colors, but plenty of things still hold their form. Like you said, like a Lego guy would still, you'd be able to see that if it was just painted one solid color. So it's fun to go and hide those little Easter eggs in there because I think that's the fun of it. And that's, kids love that part, especially, which makes me so happy. I have a little niece and she adores that kind of stuff. It's really sweet to watch.
Okay. So what has been the smallest thing that you've done? And then by contrast, the largest thing that you've done to date?
Well, So if we're talking about one solid piece, gosh, Minya might be one of the smallest. I don't go much smaller than that little, that cat there, because okay. I mostly use screws to hold everything in place. Mm-hmm. And once you get too small, you're losing all the detail when you're using that as your fastener. If you were, you know, I know a couple trash artists that use glue, and I think that there's a little more freedom and forgiveness with using glue when you go real small. But if you're using screws, it gets to be a little harder to go. Any smaller than that. So that's one of the smallest, maybe not the smallest, but that's the first that comes to mind. But in terms of just the piece itself, an elephant named Jericho was probably my biggest piece. That ended up being with the ears, probably, I think it was 5.5 feet, something like that wide.
Wow.
And I think maybe like 5 feet tall, but I did do a mural, which, if you're talking about the whole body of work, that's for sure the largest, but that's several pieces that were all put into one large mural. So it depends on how specific you want to get, but that one I think was like 22 feet long, and it was like 22 trash pieces, I think it was. I can't remember exactly, but it was quite large.
Okay. So a question then, how are you sourcing all of your materials? Where are these coming from? And can you give us a behind the scenes insight on how you keep track of all this stuff? Because again, the variety of what you use is not like, oh, I use these five items every time. No, you have so much detail. That elephant alone, oh my gosh, like it's crazy. Okay, so like, where are you getting all this stuff?
So I suppose it's because I'm coming from the perspective of the person that's doing the work that I never even really thought about this, but you'd be surprised. Like the amount of people that ask me where it's coming from, I kind of am surprised with how many times I get asked that question, because it's never been difficult to find junk because everybody has it. Everybody has it. And I guess it's because I'm sure they're thinking of it as being more organized than it actually is. It's a little bit ridiculous, a little bit all over the place. From the very beginning, it's all been friends, family, and members of my community. That's it. I've never gone to a manufacturer of some sort and been like, can I have all of your whatever? That being said, though, I do have some connections with HVAC companies, which have been really, really instrumental. My boyfriend does HVAC, so we get like a lot of vinyl tubing, a lot of copper pipe, which has the that white insulation. I use that in my work a lot. They always have a ton of that because there will be maybe a few feet of pipe insulation, and they can't use that copper pipe because it's not long enough for the job, so it'll get scrapped. So I just take that, and the copper is nothing to me, but that's the more valuable part of it. So it's kind of like this nice back and forth where it could be like, I'll take the junk insulation and I'll give you back your copper pipe and you can get, you know, your exchange for it. Yeah. So, I've gotten it from them, quite a bit of stuff from HVAC companies, specifically where my boyfriend works. Lots of broken toys from neighbors, family members, friends, all that kind of stuff. Initially, it was like a lot of milk jugs and things like that. As I've gotten into this more, I've kind of gained a bigger understanding for what will hold the paints that I use well and what chips and what works and what doesn't. So I've been a little bit more selective about what I'll take now that I've kind of figured out what works best. And there's the things that I love very much that I'll always take, like basketballs. I love basketballs. They work very much like skin would, I feel. And they hold really well. So, and for ears, it's perfect because you can bend them. So you can make like cow ears, stuff like that very easily. Minya back there has basketballs for her ears, and so does Krishna, the elephant, both basketball ears. I'll always take that. That's great. And it's good because I typically want two of whatever I'm using, because the work that I make is a bust and I'll need it to be symmetrical. So whatever I'm doing on one side, I'll need to do on the other. So something that's round, I can go ahead and section that into all equal parts. So basketballs are great. I also love LOL doll balls, which are very specific. I know it's this very goofy toy. I don't really even know what the toy is exactly, but I know that it comes in a plastic sphere. And I don't think that the sphere has any bearings on the toy itself. It seems very wasteful, but they're great for me. again, we're dealing with rounded shapes, which is great for what I do. So friends and family mostly.
Wow.
Wow. And I don't organize it in any particular way. I've tried so many times to get a handle of it on it and be like, this is where we're putting this. This is where we're putting this. And then just the creative process ends up ruining all of it. And it ends up just kind of this massive junk, you know, all over again. So eventually I'll maybe come up with a better system.
So the one thing I think talking to you, Stephanie, is just there's this thing people say, like, there's so much waste. There's so much plastic that, like, are we ever going to come up with a solution? And most people throw up their hands and go, no, you know, just bury it. I don't know. Nobody really has a plan for all of this. Do you really feel like you're making an impact in what you're doing and what you're creating? Do you feel like your efforts are actually making a difference in kind of bringing this to the forefront so people can have a conversation around, hey, how can we find a use for something that's really has no purpose now?
I don't know, honestly. I know that I've had a number of people that have reached out to me, which I love when this happens, that have reached out to me and said, I think this is really cool. I tried it myself. I made this, and they'll show me what they made. So I think if anything, my impact has been just kind of because I'm one person, even though I've made quite a few pieces, it's not even close to a dent in the problem. So I think if anything, my impact is more the facilitating of putting this form of art online somewhere where maybe someone who wasn't aware of it before now is aware of it and now thinks maybe I'll try it. Because I'm not at all the first person to do artwork from junk plastic. This has been something for quite some time, but it's not like a household understood art form. It's not a discipline that people are really aware of unless they're really invested in the art world, very invested in scrolling the internet, or very invested in upcycling. You got to be like one of those things to know that this is a thing. So hopefully the more stuff like this and the more podcasts, whatever that I can do to show that this is not only something that is being done, but is being done by just kind of me, just I'm who am I, you know? So like anyone can do it. I mean, and I was really, really horrible at it when I first started. I think everybody's really horrible at the things that they try when they first try them. So as long as you think it's fun and as long as you want to keep doing it, I mean, anyone can do it, really.
There's have you done a starfish yet?
I did there, yes, but only one. And it was part of that mural that I was talking about, that underwater mural.
Okay. Cause the reason I'm asking is there's a story that somebody told me long ago, and it's really appropriate to what you're doing. And basic gist of the story is there's a boy walking the beaches, the tide had come in and there were starfish all over the place. They've been washed up onto the beach and the tide went back out and all these starfish, they're stranded. They have no hope. So this boy is just, and there's thousands of them, right? The boy's picking them up one at a time and just chucking them back in the ocean, right? One at a time. And somebody, an old man comes up and says, you know, what are you doing? Why are you wasting your time with all these starfish? You know, look how many there are. You're not making an impact. It's not, you're wasting your time. And the boy picked up the next starfish and said, well, I'm not wasting my time with this one. And threw this one into the ocean. So even though there's like plastic galore, it's a global problem, there's mounds of it floating in the ocean, there's one person named Stephanie who is doing something about it. And it might feel like a small way, but 30,000 people are following the journey of this small time approach at picking up and being part of the solution instead of complaining about how much problems there are. What I love listening to you and watching your work is you're not just talking about it. We like to talk about the problems in the world, but you're actually doing something about it and demonstrating to us that there is a way to taint something that nobody wants and to turn it into something beautiful that people would be proud to have in their home and have on display. So I feel like you're kind of like that little boy picking up these starfish and saving them one by one and making a difference, even though it seems insurmountable that we're ever going to have a solution to this. That doesn't stop you from picking up the next starfish.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I find inspiring about your work.
That's a perfect analogy.
So I need another starfish made, just in that sense, because that's what I see from you. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. It's gorgeous. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I mean, it's a ton of fun to do while making a difference. It's fulfilling for me, and hopefully it gives people something that they're proud of, like you said, to hang in their okay. home.
So for those people inspired to do what you're doing and to start and just learn as you go, any basic steps that you would give to a new person that looks at your work and goes, I want to try this. I really, really want to try. Is there any kind of like a 1, 2, 3 maybe to start?
You'd be surprised on how much you teach yourself with just kind of getting hands-on in there. I would say I tried a couple different methods, like I mentioned in my first piece, with how to fasten everything. Ultimately, I decided that I was too impatient for glues. And I also don't really trust adhesives, to be very honest. There's a Gorilla Glue hot glue that I will use for the smaller pieces or for whatever I can't get a screw through. But for the most part, I use screws. And if you're going to do that, my recommendation is drywall screws. I prefer how sharp they are, and they come in basically every length. I've been asked like a bunch of times why I don't use specifically this kind, or why I don't do this, because the screw heads are distracting or whatever it might be. I like the look of the screw heads. I think it gives it like a steampunk kind of like a machine sort of look. And since I do animals, I think that aesthetic is nice with organic forms. But I don't know, I guess if you don't really prefer the look of screws, glue would be fine. I don't know how durable it would be, and I don't know how big you could go. I don't think that you could make a piece this large with glue. No. But that would be my suggestion. If you're going to use screws, to use drywall screws specifically. I like how sharp they are. Not all plastics you can drive through. Some are too brittle. If you find a brittle plastic and you specifically choose that you definitely want to use it because it is so perfect, I would suggest taking a little dab of hot glue and heating up the spot that you're going to drive the screw through, just so it's a little bit melted. And then you can usually get the screw through without shattering the plastic.
There you go.
Those would be my recommendations.
Okay. There you go. You not only get to meet stuff, and you get the how-to right here behind the scenes. I love it.
A little bit.
So not only have you caught the attention of 30,000 plus people, which I'm so happy to see people falling in love with your stuff, you've caught the attention of some other notable names, I guess, in the space out in entertainment world. What's it feel like to kind of get the nod or the request to make something special for somebody that many of us admire and adore in the public eye? What's that like?
Overwhelming a little bit, to be very honest. I'm always, and it's because it's commissions too. It's not just it being a notable person, but really that's how I feel about any commission. It gets to be a little bit where you're thinking to yourself, what I have in my head might not be necessarily what this person might want, or, you know, whatever it might be. And there's a little bit of doubt that goes on with your own creative process, that you're thinking, okay, well, this is the way that I would do it. Is this what they would want? What color should I use? Is this composition right? Are they going to like it? All that kind of stuff. And that, like I said, is not just for notable people. That's for anybody I make a commission for, which is one of the big reasons why I stopped doing commissions, because they stress me out so much. I prefer the idea of like, I'm going to make this. I think it's cool. And I just, if someone wants it, this is what I'm asking for it. And, you know, just let me know if you're interested, because that feels very much like more transactional to me. It feels more like, you really like what I've done. I'm really proud of what I've done. There's no like chatter in my head about, is it right? You know what I mean? So I know, but an honor regardless. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would never say that I didn't want to do, you know, a big impressive piece like that. Like that's so great. That's so great. And such an honor.
Amazing. Okay. So you have items you're going to be delivering soon to probably anxious new fans and customers of your work. What else is up? What's coming up next? You got to give us an insight of some things that you're thinking about doing in the future.
Well, I have on deck. I've been trying to kind of get my bearings about making Anubis. I put up a poll on my Instagram and on my Facebook. It was a couple weeks ago now. between, I found a really cool picture of a mandrel with its mouth wide open and like kind of yelling, and then just kind of a bust of Anubis. And I kind of thought that they were both similar in like the edgy, fun quality that they brought, but such different subjects. So I just kind of put up a poll of like, which one would you rather see? And it was overwhelmingly geared towards Anubis. So I've been trying to come up with a way that I want to do Anubis for the last couple of weeks, and I haven't really nailed it down. But I do have that in the works planned, and I want to make some more birds soon. Birds tend to be pretty popular, and I love the fact that I can use knives. Like, knives are the go-to. Plastic cutlery for the feathers works great, and I've got a ton of it. So that's what I want to try to do next. Anubis and then some bird of some sort.
Okay. So yeah, I'm learning so much about feathers and, oh yeah, this is really good. Basketballs. I'm learning.
They were great.
I'm going to be like, oh, Stephanie's going to need that. Yeah. But I'm sure you have enough already. It's great.
I have so much stuff. I can't even tell. I have a couple of videos of it on my Instagram of my trash space. It's ever changing. Truly every day it looks a little bit more ridiculous, but it's completely a mess right now. It's on the other side of this wall. And I wish there was some more like put together method for organization. It starts that way. I have the greatest intentions, and then it all just, you know, the creative process, you just end up making things, they go everywhere. And then you're just like, eh, whatever. No need to put it back. It's no big deal. So it's a mess over there.
And the big thing I like too, and I think an encouragement to anybody that is creative, is the generally we tend to just put the finished product photos out and say, well, look what I made. But you actually take us through the process as well. And you kind of take us through all the different steps. So I love that, because I feel like I can see it being built in front of me. And now it makes sense when I see the final product and go, wow. Like before you paint them and they're all different colors and all different things going on, you're like, what is this? And then as soon as you paint them, it just brings it all together, right? And then you're like, oh, I get Now I get
That's it. That's my favorite part of it. I mean, without fail, every time I'll put up a piece, because I do show the building process and the stages, and you can see it all like, you know, in its raw form. Undoubtedly, there's always people that say to me, like, I wish you didn't paint it. It looked better before. I prefer that look more, which to each their own. Everyone's got their own aesthetic and their own style of doing things. But that being said, there's plenty of upcycle artists that work in plastics that do that, that do leave it its raw form, and that do have it as being, you know, this representation of what it is in pieces. I personally, as an artist, my vision is to show what those pieces can be when they're put together to make a full form. And my intention is always to make it look more like the animal that I'm going for, usually animal, whatever it might be, but typically animal, than a sculpture of its parts. I prefer the look of like, okay, this is clearly a lion. And then you get a little bit closer and you think there's something really kind of weird and off about this. What's it made out of? And then you look closer and then you do see like the Spider-Man torso and the toothbrush and whatever it might be. So for me, the painting process really is a lot of who I kind of see myself as an artist. That's my aesthetic. That's what I want to put out there. And that's what I prefer to do. It's so fun to just paint it and see like the structure come together.
Amazing. And so where have some of your products ended up in the world that you're just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe my stuff is in this part of the world now. Like any spots where your stuff has landed?
I've sent pieces overseas. There's a couple, Japan, the UK, Germany, a couple pieces have gone to Canada. It's always so nerve-wracking shipping anything. But especially when you're shipping outside the country, it's just, I'm checking on the tracking number. Where is it at? Is everything okay? Cause I've had FedEx lose a piece once and it was a nightmare roller coaster for me. It was just going through all of the motions. I was on the phone with so many people at different parts during the like 2-3 weeks, whatever it was. And I went through the whole spectrum of emotions. It was at first I was like really patient, really sweet. And then I was angry. And then I was crying. And then I went back to sweet again. And I was like, how do I get this piece found? And eventually they just lost it completely. And the client was so very patient and kind about it. Thank goodness. He was just like, make me another one. I get it. It's not your fault. But I mean, it could have gone a bunch of different ways. And like I said, shipping is always a nightmare, but thankfully that doesn't happen very often at all. Knock on wood, but it's a nerve wracking process. Let's say that.
It's exciting to see where your stuff has landed. And again, I love the interaction of your community. I love them cheering you on and encouraging you. Because again, it can be quite lonely to do what we do. You're kind of in a vacuum and you're hoping that the world will love whatever you're working on. And then to see the results and see the reactions is great, because it's kind of like, okay, yeah, this is working. This is really, really working. I love seeing
Someone appreciates it.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, we had talked briefly about how it's just, you know, there's clearly a community online for it. I mean, the groups on Facebook, the different groups on, or the different pages on Instagram, other social media, those are really the two that I mostly use. But it is out there, but not in my personal life. I don't have anyone that I know and that I see regularly that does anything like what I do. So like you said, it can feel a little bit like a vacuum to a degree. But it's really nice when, you know, like someone like you reaches out and says, hey, let's talk about this.
Well, it's really nice when someone like me reaches out to someone like you and you say, yes, I'll come on your podcast. And I'm like, score, this is amazing, because I'm part of your community and I'm loving your stuff. And I think there's like 30,000 people like me that would love to have a chance to talk to you and spend some time with you, and you're so gracious to do so. So on behalf of your community, of which I am a member, thank you for what you do. And I'm so inspired talking to you and watching what you do. And I'm just a big, big fan up here in Canada. And I can't wait to see the next thing. I'm excited to see what's happening next for you.
Thank you. I truly appreciate it. I really, really do.
So let's send everybody, Stephanie, to your website. Let's talk about that a little bit before we close off. I'd like to send people there. And again, I guess Instagram, Facebook, where else you'd like us to find you.
So my website is sugarfox.net. That being said, I would say that if you're interested in following my work in a very real way, that Instagram really is the best place to be. That's where I post the most content. That's where my most complete portfolio is. And that is where things go up for sale first. So if I'm going to make something and I put it up for sale, it goes to my Instagram page first. Sometimes it doesn't even make it to Facebook, which I post to pretty immediately after that before it sells. So Instagram really is the place to be. Second to that, I do have a Facebook page. It's just Sugar Fox, all capital, all one word, which also is pretty complete. Complete in terms of what I do right now. It doesn't have my whole catalog from the last few years. I think I made that page 2 years ago, something like that. So that one's a good one too, but Instagram is the more complete one to look at.
Perfect. And we'll have links to everything in the show notes for everyone to go there. And again, if you're listening on your phone while we're talking, I hope you've been scrolling along and keeping track, because you're going to be scrolling for quite a while. My wife loves the horse. She grew up with horses. I love the seahorse. That was gorgeous. And I'm just scrolling as I talk. There was and the chameleon. Oh my gosh. I was waiting for the eye to start moving, because it is so realistic, right? I'm like, it's going to jump right off that branch and right into my arms. Everything is so realistic and beautiful. I don't know. I'm so inspired. I want to go find a pile of garbage now and see what I can make just talking to you. So it's working, Stephanie. It's working. Thank you so much for being part of our podcast.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it.
Everyone go check it out, please, and give a like, a share, a follow, do all of the things. We're asking you to do all the things. And, give Stephanie some feedback as well. Let her know what she's doing right, because there's so many things to talk about. And Stephanie, thank you so much for being part of our podcast.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
This has been the Upcycle Canada podcast. Thanks for listening today. We appreciate your feedback and would love to connect with you. Email your questions, comments, or suggestions to upcyclecanadapodcast@gmail.com. To find out more about our business and access links to all our social media sites, podcast notes, and more, please visit upcyclecanada.ca. A review of this episode on the podcast app of your choice is always appreciated. Please help us build this community by sharing our podcast with your family and friends. Our thanks to Jacob Moon for the instrumental backing track used in this podcast. please visit jacobmoon.com for more on this talented Canadian artist. Join us again for more great topics, ideas, and practical steps to help you in your daily life. Thank you for listening. Let's keep this conversation going.
Hey, this is Dave. You're like, what's this music? I thought the podcast was over. Well, it is. This is actually an ad. Oh, you're like, an ad. But this is different. This is for another podcast called, ready? Dad Space. Dad Space is a podcast created for dads by dads. Head over to dadspace.ca for all the information. And we would love, if you know a dad, if you are a dad, if you've ever had a dad, if you know a new dad, a current dad, an empty nest dad, we have a podcast just for dads. And I'd love to share it with you and to share it with a special dad in your life, dadspace.ca. Thank you for listening to the podcast you've already been listening to. But if you want a little bit more podcasting greatness, check out dadspace.ca, dadspace.ca, for all the goodness for your favorite dad. Aww. It's like a Father's Day present every day. We'll see you over at dadspace.ca. Thanks for listening to all of our podcasts, and we'll talk soon. This is Dave, and I'll meet you at dadspace.ca. Cheers. And now we dance.